So I'll now introduce our next speaker. Our next speaker is Sage French. She's the creator of trendytechie.ca, a lifestyle blog centered on her experience as a young woman in STEM. She's currently in her final year of her undergraduate degree at Dalhousie University, where she studies computer science. But at the same time, she's working as a developer, technologist, and educator at Microsoft. In her role at Microsoft, Sage builds online software and app development training for global audiences on edX.org and Microsoft Virtual Academy. She's been recognized for her work inspiring young women to explore careers in technology and teaching technical skills to youth across North America. So please join me in welcoming Sage to the podium.
Thank you. All right, good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. I know I hate when speakers do that too, but I had to, I'm sorry. Now I see why they do it. My name is Sage, and I wear very many hats. But today, we're all here in this room together because we share a common passion, and that's discovery. In all the STEM fields, science, tech, engineering, math, discovery and innovation are common themes. And as innovators, scientists, however you fit into this big picture of STEM, we have this incredible opportunity to use our skills and our passions to change the world and, most importantly, create the future that we want to live in. And I think that's the most powerful and exciting spot to be in the entire world. So I'm lucky enough to have been able to find a career in which I find myself very fulfilled and that I can do innovation on a daily basis and feel like I'm actually reaching people around the world. And I feel so fortunate to be here. So for the next 20 minutes or so, I'm going to share with you my story, how I got to where I am, and the 5 key tips and lessons that I have for you as you turn your passions into your career. The very first thing is to find your spark. And the spark, when I say that, I don't mean just some casual passion that you have, you know, I like to swim or I like to do this just because I can. Your spark is something that ignites something deep inside your core. It's something that when you do it, it activates the butterflies in your stomach and you just realize that you can't live without doing this thing. Now, I'm not saying that it's easy to find your spark. Like you, I had thousands of interests as a kid, and my parents were really the source of this because they encouraged me to do anything and everything that I wanted to do. And they took me really seriously, too. So if I said that I was going to be the next Taylor Swift, they were like, yes, you are, you know? I was going to be the female Jackie Chan, they're like, yes, you are. So I tried so many different things growing up, and by the time I got to high school, I realized that I wasn't going to be the next Taylor Swift or the next Jackie Chan, and at that point, I had settled my passions on computer graphics. And at this point, you know, I feel like every time I've taken on a new passion, I've decided wholeheartedly that that is going to be what I'm doing for the rest of my life, and you know what, I'm going to be the best person in the world at this thing. So at this point, in the summer of grade 10, my plan was to own Pixar. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to be an animator, and I'm going to sneak my way up and take over from Steve Jobs, who ran it at the time, like no big deal. So in the summer of grade 10, I went to University of Pennsylvania for the Computer Graphics Summer Academy of Applied Science and Technology. And that was a mouthful back then, and I still can't properly say it. But in that summer, we spent 4 weeks doing computer graphics studies, learning how to render things, you know, animate characters, rig them, the whole lot. And I was like, yes, I am well on my way to owning Pixar one day. If I can spend 7 hours a day looking at this fairy, this is the fairy that I made, and trying to make her wings translucent for 7 hours without getting bored, I found my passion. But then something happened that changed my life and changed the way I think about my passions entirely. I found my spark, and I discovered fire. So I obviously didn't actually discover fire, and I'm not going to try and convince you that I did, but I like to call this my caveman moment, because what happened to me hit me at such a primal point in my core. I was like, yes, I found my passion now. I know what it's like to know what I want to do. What happened was our teacher for the computer graphics camp said, let's take a break and do something totally different. And he pulled up this script of code. How many of you have seen code before? Yes, you just made me so happy. I don't think I've ever been in an audience where that many girls have said, yes, I've seen code, so yay. So he pulled up this code, and at the time, I hadn't seen code. I was in grade 10, and it was this long script of words, and I was like, okay, is that like a theater script? I've seen that before. Like, when you say a script, what do you mean? And he said, this is a particle generator. I'm like, yes, you have my attention. And he clicked run, and this realistic animation of fire burst to life on the screen. And he explained that while we had been doing visual arts for the last 3 weeks, this fire was made entirely out of code, no arts involved. And in that moment, that was the first time I saw the real power of programming and the fact that you can create worlds that don't exist and that aren't bound by the laws of physics and gravity and whatever we are bound by, you know, in physical space. So that was my first taste of computing, and I was hooked. That next year, I went back to high school, and I took my first ever computer science course. And I swear it felt like I was at Hogwarts. I was like, this is magical. I am changing the world one line at a time. Every little line of code that I learned that worked, I was like, this is the magic spell. It's actually creating things, you know? In reality, my first program looked like this. And I didn't even, that's a little 8-bit turtle. I didn't even draw the turtle myself. It was a program that was pre-built to teach kids and youth how to code. It's called Small Basic, and we used Visual Basic, which is a programming language, to send it little commands and make the turtle move around the screen and draw lines. So really, I wasn't doing any important work here, but I really still did feel like Hermione. I felt like every time it compiled and ran successfully, that spark and that fire inside me was lighting up again. And to this day, I still feel like that, because every time a program works, it tickles that part of me that realizes how powerful computing is. And when you code, you're speaking the language of the computer, and you can make the impossible possible. So once you find your spark, you have to pursue it, and you have to pursue it relentlessly. Whatever you do, don't stop. Don't let other people say, no, that's not your thing. Because if you know it's your thing, it's your thing. You're the one who gets to decide that. So I went to an all-girls private school for my high school years, and that meant that our classes were already very small. In fact, there were probably fewer people in my grade than there are in this room right now. So in that first computer science class that I took, there were 11 girls, that's it. And by the end of that first year, six of us, which is over half, technically, six of us wanted to go on and do it at the 12th grade level. So we left that school year, went into summer thinking, yes, we're gonna learn how to do stuff that's not Small Basic and turtles drawing triangles and right angles on the screen. We're gonna learn how to really code. But then we came back to school after that summer, and it was our last year, and the school told us that they're not offering computer science anymore because there were only six of us and they needed 10 to run the courses. Now, I was not happy about that, and neither were my parents, because, as I said before, they were always championing me in my corner. So we took to the school and we said, we are taking computer science. I said, I'll take it at the boys' school if I have to. There's a boys' school down the road. I'll walk down the road. It actually happened that the computer science class lined up with my free period. But they said no, which, okay, makes sense. The whole thing is single-sex education, whatever. It made sense. Okay, why don't I take it from an online university? Because online education was becoming very successful. And I thought I'll take it and get the university credit for it, but just take that as a high school credit instead. Also not an option. We tried five or six different things, and they would not let me take computer science at the high school level. So then I was at a crossroads, because we were nearing this time to apply for universities, and I had to decide, am I going to go with this spark that I feel, that I haven't really done anything big in, that I don't really know if it's truly my thing, you know, beyond doing little animations? Do I do with that and take this leap of faith in my spark, or do I just do what I had planned to do before, which was computer graphics, business, arts? Well, I decided to follow the spark, and I chased it all the way to Halifax, which is where I live now, at Dalhousie University, and I ended up studying computer science. And honestly, it's the best decision I ever made in my life. Now, when I found myself at Dal, I was in a totally different world than high school. I went from being around 100% women, or mostly women, like we have here. I see a couple men in the crowd. And kudos to you for being male allies for women in this industry. I think that's fantastic. I went from being around 100% women to being one of the 10% female population at Dal Computer Science. The ratio has since improved, but it's not improved by much. So quite often, in rooms of over 100, I was one of four or five girls, which was crazy to me. And then what got even crazier was, over time, I started being the only girl in the room. And I was like, what's happening? Where are all the girls going? So I asked them, and it turned out that my female classmates were dropping out of computer science or dropping out of school entirely. So when I asked them why, many of them said that it was the gender stereotyping and the gender bias that just made them feel uncomfortable. Now, I probably am not the first to tell you this, and I will definitely not be the last, but stereotypes are just stupid. Do not listen to them. So in honor of how stupid these stereotypes are, I've decided to make a BuzzFeed list. Three totally untrue myths about being a woman in STEM, written by, yes, a real computer programmer. Number one, you have to be one of the guys to fit in. I had a girl tell me that she just didn't want to, you know, dress like a dude anymore or bro it out to do her work. And that's just ridiculous. You don't have to do that. Because really, what it boils down to is if you are good at what you do, if you love what you do, that's all that matters, not how you fit into the man's world. Myth number two, girls aren't tough enough for leadership roles. This one just drives me crazy. But the girl who told me this, she was in a group with four guys, and they all knew each other beforehand. And she was this new outsider coming into their group, and she didn't feel like her voice was heard. So she got stuck doing all of the communications work, which is just so stereotypical, right? The girl got stuck doing all the writing and the speaking while the guys did all the code. And that's not what she wanted to do, and she said, if this is going to be the rest of my life, I don't want to be in computer science. But truly, if you've ever seen someone, male or female, fight for what they want, you know that we're all capable enough and tough enough for these roles. And finally, you don't look like a insert capability here. This drives me insane. You look like whatever you want to be, because at the bottom of this problem is the fact that your looks have nothing to do with your intelligence. And you have to remember that, because people will try and tell you otherwise, and you should just absolutely not listen to them. So when I heard these girls say that they left computer science for these reasons, I was like, seriously? But then I realized that these myths exist for a reason. And that reason is that people believe them. And some people believe that these myths are true. And as long as some people believe them, and those are what we're talking about, then other people are going to believe them too and knock themselves out of the game before they've even given it a shot. So it's up to us, everyone in this room, everyone who knows that these myths and these stereotypes aren't true, to counter them by telling our positive stories. And to share these stories about successful women and successful people in technology, engineering, science, math, and just, you know, preach the goodness about this industry so that everyone can feel welcome. Which brings me to my next point, and that's finding your platform. Now, my platform was Trendy Techie. And I started Trendy Techie 4 years ago, next week, actually. And it started from a particularly negative experience that I had. A man told me that the computer I was buying was too powerful for what I was going to use it for. But he hadn't even asked me what I was going to use it for. He just assumed that because I was a young woman, what I was going to be doing was not computationally powerful, is what he told me. And I said, well, actually, I'm going to be developing virtual reality apps using the Kinect sensor and Unity 3D. He was like, oh, you know, you just don't look like you know how to code. And so I was really upset by that. Because I thought, if I'm facing this from some random Best Buy employee, what am I going to be facing in the industry? So I went home that day, and I was tearfully Googling for hours, trying to find somebody who was telling the story that I so desperately wanted to hear. And that was the story about a young woman who is in technology, who actively fights these stereotypes, and who shows what it's really like to be a woman in tech, shows the good, shows the bad, just all of it, but doesn't try and fit in with the guys, doesn't try and change who she is to be part of this tech world. But I didn't find anyone that really spoke to me, so I decided to write these stories myself. Now, your platform doesn't have to be a blog or a speaking platform or a stage. It can be your research. It can be your workbench. Anything that you want it to be, as long as it's something where you can share your passions and share your impact. That is your platform, and that's how you speak to the world. Now my platform includes my work at Microsoft. At Microsoft, I'm on the Learning Experiences team, which takes care of a lot of the educational resources that Microsoft has for people around the world. So my courses, once they go live online, they reach thousands of developers all around the world in different languages, genders, backgrounds, everything. And it's such an incredible place to be in, because now not only do I get to use this code and experience that Hermione feeling every time I do something for my job, but I also get to experience and share in other people's own caveman moments and bring out my passion for computer science into their worlds and help them find their own sparks. Working at Microsoft is an insanely incredible experience, and it's so eye-opening. It's a 100,000-person company, and before I joined it, I would never have believed that it could be so close-knit. But really, it is. It doesn't feel like we're all running around with our heads cut off. It feels like we're all in adjacent rowboats just rowing together. You know, we're all rowing towards the same goal, and that's truly what this community feels like. And that's what I love about technology and what I love about STEM is we have incredible communities. I mean, look at this room here. I encourage you all to make connections while you're here because this is how communities form. And community is key to turning your passion into your career. I would absolutely not be where I am today if I didn't have my community of allies behind me. When I say allies, I mean people who invest in your success and want to help you achieve your goals. Allies can be your teachers, your parents, your friends, your teammates, your mentors, anybody who invests in your success and helps you get where you need to go. This is one of my best allies, Susan Ibach. She's a technical evangelist at Microsoft Canada, and 3 years ago, she brought me into the Microsoft Student Partner Program, and that's where I got my start with Microsoft. Microsoft Student Partners, or MSPs, are student evangelists who are representatives of Microsoft on their campuses. And what they do is they host events, they teach people how to code, and they teach people new things about Microsoft technologies. So 8 months into this role, I had run a couple events, and then I got hired as an intern at Microsoft Canada. And I worked on Susan's team for a full year over 2 internships, and just really expanded my community and expanded my knowledge of the world. I met so many incredible people and gained so many mentors that really helped me achieve my goals. And the goals I had at the time were to speak at my first conference and give a technical demo to over 500 people, run my first hackathon in Vancouver and travel Canada bringing out these technologies, and even deliver my first course at Microsoft, which you see here. And that ultimately led to the role that I'm in now. I even had a mentor bring me to Seattle on his own Aeroplan miles and have me job shadow him for a week, all because we had a good connection and because I asked. So mentors really can help you. And as Natalie said, there's so many ways to find these mentors, and I've listed a couple of my favorite organizations here. There's so many more on the internet, and if you see some that appeal to you, I highly recommend that you reach out. And the most important thing to remember when you're reaching out is actually something said by one of our generation's most profound philosophers. Started from the bottom, now we hear. My point is that everybody who's successful started where you are. They all started in lower year education. They all went to grade school, high school, possibly university, possibly internships. You know, we all started in the same spot. So people who you reach out to, they've likely had mentors as well, lifting them up and rowing in the same direction. And they'll be willing to return that favor and continue the cycle of positivity and help you reach your goals. Which brings me to my last point. The most important thing that I've ever learned about goals, and I don't even remember where I learned this, I think someone had a presentation about it once, and it just stuck with me. A plan without a time frame is just a dream. But a plan with a time frame, now that is a goal. Think about it. If you say, I want to get into NASA someday, that's a dream. But if you say, I am going to do this application next week and get into the academy next summer. Now that is a goal. So let's all close our eyes and set a goal together. I'm going to do it too. Set a goal that can be big or small, measurable, and with a time frame and a plan. That is the most important part. Let's go. Everyone got their goals? I'll share mine with you. My goal is to release 2 Windows 10 courses this summer, one on June 1st and one on July 1st. And because I have a plan and a time frame, I'm going to do my best to do it. Now, you don't have to share your goals with me or with your friends or with anybody. I actually have notebooks upon notebooks of goals that I will never show to anybody, unless maybe one day I do own Pixar or something and I'm like, hey, see, I did it. You don't have to share your goals if you're not comfortable with it. But sharing your goals with your mentors and with your allies can really be the difference and really make you turn your passion into your career. So with that, I will leave you with two quotes, my two favorite quotes ever. The first one is by Henry Ford, "Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right." And finally, my favorite quote of all time by Alan Kay, "The best way to predict the future is to invent it." Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. So we'll do the same thing for questions. There's a microphone right over there.
Was there anything that you learned in the activities that you did when you were younger that helped you in what you're doing now?
Absolutely. A big part of my job is teaching, so that requires a lot of self-confidence and confidence in my own knowledge that I can, you know, be qualified to teach the things that I'm teaching, especially since I'm still a student, you know? It's weird to be learning computer science concepts and then creating courses about a lot of the same concepts or things that I haven't even learned yet. So, well, no, obviously I've learned them, but I haven't been supposed to have learned them in school. So what I really learned when I was doing a lot of theater and performance as a kid was that confidence. I learned how to stand up on a stage and talk to people or sing to people, and how to realize that it's okay to get in front of an audience and not imagine them with their clothes off. Because that doesn't work. And I'm not doing it right now, by the way. What really stuck with me from my theater days, and this is probably the thing that I always remind myself before I speak or before I teach a course, is the audience wants you to succeed. I was at an audition one day and I almost ran out in tears. I was actually crying, trying to sing through my tears because I was so nervous. And the woman took me aside and she said, they want you to succeed. They want you to be right for the part. You know, they want to be inspired by you. So that's probably the most poignant thing that I learned through my other explorations.
You know, social life and just having that work-life balance is so important.
Yes.
I was just wondering, like, any strategies you would like to share with us?
Work-life balance is something that is a really interesting concept, because I think that to think that work and life are separate is to think negatively about work. I don't think about work as being something I have to do that I hate doing and life as being everything else in the world. That's a very negative balance, I think. So what I like to think of it as is all of it is pursuing my passions, and it's all interwoven together. So I actually work on a fluid schedule, and my team is in Seattle while I'm in Halifax, so we already have a 4-hour time difference, which is very difficult to manage. But what I do is I work fluidly. So I'll go to a class and bring my work laptop, and then in between classes I'll work. When I have to do assignments, then I will stay up late into the night doing those and then work the next morning. You know, it's all fluid. If I feel particularly down one day, I'll just do something else until I can handle doing what I need to do. And that's what it's about. It's work-life balance is not trying to do it all within specific time constraints, at least not to me. It's balancing things and spreading them out evenly so that you can manage everything that you want to do and you can have it all. Yes?
Is the wage gap something you have to deal with in your field?
The wage gap is something that is talked about all the time. I personally have been very well compensated at Microsoft. They're very fair. But I know some women and some minorities who haven't had the same experience as I have. So the thing with the wage gap is we have a culture of not talking about our wages and not talking about money. And while that is respectful, when it's such an important topic for us, I think we need to talk about it more. So there's tons of things online, resources you can find, current salaries from different companies for specific roles. And if you get an offer, you can see what other people have been offered at that same position and compare it. And if it's not something that you agree with, tell them. You know, you can fight this wage gap yourself.
Sorry. broken. So it's one of your experiences. So when you were kind of down on yourself, like when you went to buy that computer, did you actually end up buying it, or did that completely deter you from just doing it?
Oh, no. I didn't buy it from him. I was like, oh, nope, I'm not buying this from you, sir. Excuse me. I bought a different one, but I ended up buying a more powerful one. So I was like, stick it to you, from a different store. So yeah, I don't ever leave a situation feeling like you've lost it. You know, if someone's being negative to you, don't take it. You have to teach them, you know, put them in their place a little bit. At least that's the philosophy I live by. Because if somebody goes around being sexist or racist and not realizing that it's wrong, if nobody ever stands up to them, they're not going to know that what they said is wrong. So stand up, don't give them your money, and move on.
How important is it to find a mentor? Like, how do you have the confidence to put yourself out there and ask for one?
Well, right now you've got the confidence to stand up and ask that question. It's the same thing, same exact thing that you need. It can be daunting to ask people, please, you know, help me or sponsor me or lift me up. But really, it's about finding people you connect with. And sometimes the connections don't work. So I've had some people who I've like tried to reach out to that just, we don't click very well. And at that point, you just close the conversation and you move on and you find someone who fits you better. Honestly, though, be fearless when you're asking for mentorship, because we will help you out. You can email me, you can tweet me. I can help you find mentors that fit your career interests better. It's all about building community and trusting that the community is there for you.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.